Good morning. So I was given the task of talking about strong lensing surveys and statistics. This is my version of the cartoon that Chuck Heaton showed yesterday, and the idea is simple and powerful, beautiful. We're here. There's a population of sources and a population of potential lenses. And by doing a survey and finding those sources that are lensed, or those lenses that do lens, in practice, we can learn both about the lenses and the sources, and perhaps about the space between them as well. And I think, in general, all lens surveys fall into two categories in terms of their strategies. There's those that search among the sources for cases of lensing, and there are those that look at potential lenses for those that actually lens. I call this looking under the magnifying glass, and I'll call this type the first type of survey, and this the second type of survey, just so I don't have to repeat that long sentence every time. And in terms of what is actually measured by lensing statistics, there's a variety of things. One can look at the source image properties. The most basic one is the lens fraction. One can look at the image separation distribution, or various things having to do with the geometry of the lensed images. Or one can look at the lens properties once you find them, such as the redshift of the lens, and of course the mass or the mass profile of the lens, because mass is what one can measure once you have lensing. In terms of who plays the different roles in lensing, then we're of course always the observers. In terms of lenses, things that people have looked for are galaxy lenses and cluster lenses. In terms of sources, sources can be either galaxies or optical QSOs or radio sources. And I'll consider all of these different combinations. There's been some discussion about lens supernovae, none discovered so far, but I think Phil Marshall might talk about this after me. Now, this is my order of magnitude version also of an equation that Chuck Heaton showed yesterday. You can get a pretty good estimate of what is the lensing probability to any given source population by a particular family of lenses. Probability is just the density of lenses times the cross-section of each lens and times the distance to the lens. And if to get our order of magnitude, we consider lensing by elliptical galaxies with a density like this, and with a cross-section using the Einstein radius of, say, 5 kiloparsec squared times pi, and a typical distance to a source at redshift 2 or so, you get actually the right number, that about 1 in 1,000 lines of sight pass close enough to an elliptical galaxy to get multiply imaged, to get strongly lensed. On the other hand, if you consider clusters, their Einstein radii are about 20 times larger, so they have a larger cross-section, but they're much rarer, and there you expect about 100 times less incidences of lensing. And this is more or less what is seen, this ratio between known cluster lenses and known galaxy lenses. This, of course, has to be multiplied by the magnification bias, which for bright quasar samples is about 10. For radio samples, it's a factor of a few. And in fact, these are the fractions that we see of say, quasars lensed by galaxies or clusters. So order of magnitude, everything works out quite well. So the first lens surveys considered lensing of optical quasars by galaxies. As Chuck explained yesterday, the original motivation was the cosmological, and it was set out in a series of papers by Ed Turner and collaborators. The idea, if we show this cartoon again, is that with no dark energy, the universe looks like this. But with dark energy, there's more volume out to the same source redshift, and therefore there's a larger probability of your line of sight being intersected by some galaxy lens along the site. So lensing fraction, it was thought, could tell us about dark energy, even though it wasn't called that back then. Chuck went over all this yesterday, so I'm going to skip it. I'd just like to point out that the main source of lensed quasars today, quasars lensed by galaxies, has become Sloan, with up till now 20 new cases of lens quasars, mostly been papers by Oguri and Inada. And you can see many examples in the poster by Masamune outside. And I won't go into the details of this. There's been no statistical analysis published yet on this new and very nice large sample. There are in Masamune's poster, there are some initial results, and there's also promise that there's something in preparation. So we'll wait to see what that tells us. I'll skip this in the interest of keeping on time. In terms of galaxies lensing radio sources, again, Chuck went over this yesterday, so I'm going to skip it. Galaxy lenses, we've already heard from Leon and Tommaso, and we'll hear some more from Adam about this, so I'll skip this too. I'm not going to finish on time, though. Okay, these are by the way, these are lenses found by the second search strategy of looking under the lenses, which is quite distinct from everything that has been done before for galaxy lensing. And these were found spectroscopically. There's also these examples, which are based on optical imaging, and also produced also from Sloan. All the good things are coming out of these are not from Sloan. Sorry. But the previous ones are from Sloan. These are from HST, from Goods, and from this survey. So they're also producing very nice galaxy lenses. But that's all I'll say about this. And then there's this clever new way that Chris Fasnacht showed in the previous talk where there is one lens, there are probably more lenses. So this could be considered yet another survey strategy for finding new lenses. Okay, so now to slow down a bit, let's consider lensing by clusters of quasars or of radio sources. This is interesting because, as several people have mentioned before, when you go to the masses and separations that clusters produce, you're dominated by dark matter and don't have all the complications of the baryons, so this could be a very good and direct way of comparing observations. The theoretical predictions, this plot by a recent lensing calculation by Mueller et al. Illustrates this. For many years, people have been looking for these cluster lenses with only null results until a few years ago. The first cluster lensing quasar was found in these two papers by Inada and Oguri again. Doing all the work these days. This cluster was imaged with HST, a project led by my current student Kevin Chalon, and also my former student Iran Ofek. This is a nice press release image that HST prepared for us. It's a beautiful system. Here are the four images of the lens quasar. The thing you actually see in the middle is the fifth image. It's the first time a fifth lensed image is seen in any system. There's the host galaxy that the quasar lives in is very clearly seen. It's this red band here, a partial Einstein ring. It's really the host of a redshift 1.7 quasar stretched out to naked eye resolution. There's 15 arc seconds here going from side to side. So it's very interesting in that sense. And once we got the HST image, we quickly noticed, or correctly, Karen and Iran noticed that there's many additional lensed images here. Most notably, let's put some circles on here. The pink marks are 1, 2, 3, 4, and here this radio arc is probably the fifth image of a galaxy at redshift 3.3. As confirmed by spectroscopy. There are additional lenses, two more confirmed lensed galaxy systems here, and we're still analyzing these data. And finally, there's even a supernova here. We had two HST epochs, and now you see it before you didn't the year before. But this is probably not a lens supernova. We got spectra of these galaxies and the supernova, and the redshift only slightly behind the cluster. Plus, in addition to all this, and this is the nice thing about lensing a quasar with a cluster, is that there's time delays already measured in this paper that was just published. Put the things one on top of the other, and there's a nice, very accurately measured delay of 40 days. And there's going to be two more time delays, right? Because we have it's a quad, so it's going to be a very nicely constrained system. But of course, if we're talking about statistics, we want more than one system. And there have been estimates, for example, by this paper by Hinawi et al., that there should be about a dozen all over the sky. So where are they? Well, Masamune and his friends have just found another one. It doesn't have a phone number yet. They're keeping it secret, but a picture of it is on his poster. So this time it's a 22 arc second separation light. What about finding the other examples if they're there? Well, you have to search for them, and one idea that's a novel idea that's being carried out again by Eran Ofek is to do a geometrical, morphological kind of search for things that look like this, for wide separation lensed point sources, lensed quasars. And the idea is to simply go to known systems that have this quad geometry, try to fit a circle through them, the best circle, and then measure the various angles you can then draw, and then look at the known quads in all kinds of plots like these in terms of how well it fits a circle, and what are the maximum angles and so on. There's several other criteria that are all designed to find systems that are similar to this. And when you apply this criterion to a stellar catalog, a catalog of point sources, it in fact finds this cluster lens, 1004. Here it is as it appears in the USNOB catalog. Okay, there are the four images. And then you do this to the whole cluster catalog, and you find all sorts of interesting examples. Like here's a potential quad, right? 1, 2, 3, 4, and maybe there's even the lensing CD galaxy there. And here's another pretty one. So Iran has done this to a fraction of the USNO and found a bunch of candidates, which we then followed up with ground-based telescopes. Unfortunately, they've all turned out to be non-lenses. And here's an example of what this thing looks when Paul Schechter observed it with Magellan. It's just a cluster of galaxies in this particular configuration. But this can still be applied to a larger sample to the whole sky. We focus just in the north because that's where we had follow-up telescope time and so on. So this could be a way of finding things. Okay, and finally, let me go to the last combination here, lensing by clusters of galaxies, even in a statistical survey sense. This field was really initiated in a paper by Bartelmann et al. In 1998, in the field that's come to be called arc statistics. What they did was to take clusters they identified in an n-body simulation and then use ray trace through them and lens some idealized population of source galaxies. And they calculated the expected incidence or abundance of giant arcs on the sky, and they got this number. And then they compared it to some observed samples that were known at the time, and they got a number that's perhaps an order of magnitude larger. So simulated clusters seem to be much less effective lenses than real clusters. And this paper started a flurry of activity in the field. Here's some of the later observational studies that got sort of the same results, but not exactly. I won't go into this, but mostly a lot of theoretical activity. Oops, and this is just a fraction of all the papers in this field. And if you look at what all these papers say in general, well, some of them supported the discrepancy, while others said that there was no problem, but then they disagreed about what was wrong with this calculation. So there's a lot of confusion, which led people like Peter Schneider to say that this whole exercise is pointless. Well, he said this privately to me, but that's what he thinks. What? So our own effort to add hopefully some signal, not more noise, to this problem appears in this paper that was published last year. We tried to do things a little differently from what other people have done. First of all, we tried to define a real, well-observed sample, and we chose 10 samples that had been observed with HST. Actually, Jean-Paul Kneipp showed the same sample yesterday, so it's 10 X-ray selected clusters, some with arcs and some without. This was our observed sample. In terms of the simulations, rather than lensing some idealized distribution of galaxies, we took the real source plane as seen in the Hubble Deep Field. And rather than putting all our sources at a particular redshift, which is what everybody does, we actually used the real redshifts, photometric redshifts of the Hubble Deep Field, which are shown here. And then we lensed the Hubble Deep Field through our simulated clusters, the ones from the N-body simulation. And then you get this kind of picture, which is what most people before analyzed. But that wasn't good enough. We added to this simulated picture all the observational effects that are in the real observed sample, including the cluster that's doing the lensing, the light from the cluster, which can be quite a problem in terms of finding the arcs. Okay, so that's another effect that we put in. And finally, rather than just eyeballing our simulation and saying here's an arc, there's an arc, there was a big contribution to this by Iran also. We designed an automatic arc detection algorithm that you can apply both to the data and the observations. In the meantime, several other groups have produced such automatic arc finders, so there are at least four on the market now. I think all of them are available. So here's an application to one of the real clusters, the HST image. Here's the arc, the giant arc detected by the arc finder. And here's the simulated image I showed you before. There's, of course, in the simulations, we have many, many different projections of every cluster at many different positions, so we have a good simulated sample. So here is a giant arc that the arc finder finds, and there's some others that are smaller that are found as well. So what are the results when we do these more realistic simulations than what other people have done? We find that there's really no conflict between the simulated clusters and the observations. They're both equally effective. Here's the distribution of the number of arcs per cluster. In the simulated data, that's a solid line, or the observed sample, which is the dash curve. You can look at other statistics. For example, up here on the left, the number of arcs per cluster as a function of the length to width ratio. So there's a good match, and we find no discrepancy in any of these statistics. And the main problem trying to figure out what did we do right that others didn't is really in the source flux distribution. Okay, the fact that we're using the Hubble Deep Field with the correct density of sources, but also with the correct shapes and surface brightnesses and sizes. You know, everybody else has just been putting ellipses, that's really what gives you already a factor of three. That's right. So there's what we can say is that there's certainly not an order of magnitude problem as was claimed by previous studies. But certainly, this shows that you can do a better job. You can do get better, larger observational samples. And in fact, just on Tuesday, I saw on AstroPH, there's a new study by Hinawi et al. Again, starting from Sloan, picking out clusters identified by means of the red sequence, and then following them up from the ground. And they're finding lots of new cluster lenses, some of them with quite remarkable giant arcs that were known. They've in this one paper, they've almost doubled the known number of lens clusters. Another approach, note if we're talking about the lens survey strategies of the first and the second kind, all arc surveys have been of the second kind, looking under the lens. But it would actually be better to, in terms of comparing to predictions, to do it of the first kind, to do a blind arc survey. And this is something that can actually be done now with very wide and deep surveys such as the CFH Legacy Survey, and this is a demonstration of this idea. Here's an image from Subaru Suprime camera, so there's a very large field with a depth and a resolution that's similar to CFHLS. This happens to be pointed at a cluster, so if we zoom in here, here's the cluster, and it actually has a giant arc. And if we run our arc finder over this whole image, it actually finds the arc and it doesn't find much else. So one could actually run this thing over the whole legacy survey and find of order 100 clusters this way. Okay, so by way of a summary, I was also asked by the organizers to say, what have we learned from lens surveys and statistics? Well, as Chuck emphasized yesterday, we have not learned about cosmological parameters yet, which is what we originally wanted to learn. But I think we did learn something that we didn't necessarily want to learn, but which has come up several times, is that to do lens statistics, you have to understand your source populations well and your selection effects. And I think it's really not hopeless to go back here if we do a good job. But we've also learned some interesting astrophysics, and this will just repeat things that have been said several times during this meeting, and which emerge again and again in many studies. As Tomasov stressed, we found that the dominant lenses are normal elliptical galaxies as they sit on the fundamental plane. They have flat rotation curves. This has really come up so many times that it must be true. It even came up in the first lensing statistics analysis, I think, that I did with Hans-Walter Rix to model lensed quasars. These are the four lensed quasars from the HST snapshot survey. And we found that if we try to model them with constant mass to light ratios, no matter what the cosmology is, what omega lambda is, we can't produce these large separation lenses. We found that we could do it only if we add to the stars a dark halo that has more, that produces in total a flat rotation curve, more or less.
And it's everything in one model.
And we saw this again. It's been cut out. This is a plot that David Rusin showed with Kachanik. Again, this end of that minus two density slope, and this we've seen several times. And it's not evolving with redshift. Everything's already out there, as is seen in this paper from 3 years ago. So most of the galaxy mass was already there by redshift one. And finally, I think the last thing that we can say we've gained from lens surveys is that we've found and we're finding many new systems that we can study both as individual systems in themselves, and as complete statistical samples. Thank you very much, and sorry for going. I disagree, Joachim, because I think you had a cancellation of effects there. What is shown here is the arc statistics when we use the actual redshift distribution, or when we put it at redshift 1, all the sources in the Hubble Deep Field at redshift 1, which is what the mean is, or at redshift 1.5, and it seems to make no difference. And I think the reason why you found that it does make a difference is that you sources at different redshifts, that you were keeping them at the same size and surface brightness, and that's not what nature does. When nature moves things to a different redshift, then the sizes and the surface brightnesses change dramatically too, and I think these two things cancel, and in the end they don't matter that much. Okay, we can discuss this more later. Well, from this plot, you would say no, that it makes no difference if you put them all at the mean redshift or with the real redshift distribution of the sources. Okay, you can't even tell the curves apart. Yeah, this shows the real redshift distribution. All at the mean, and all at a redshift of 1.5 rather than 1, which is the mean. And whatever you do, it seems not to matter so much. But we disagree in this with other simulations, such as Joachim's.
Yeah. So Danny, so when you computed your predicted statistics, you know, what cosmology did you use?
The standard.
So WMAP 1 or 3 or.
It was omega lambda 0.7.
Right, and sigma 8 of?
Sigma 8, I don't remember, but I could
look
at the paper.
So the new WMAP 3 cosmology, you know, I've been told, brings the arc numbers down by about like an order of magnitude. I mean, well, I haven't verified this, but I've been told that it does.
Who told you this?
Hojun.
Okay, well, it'd be interesting to test. I mean, I agree that potentially this could be a very powerful cosmological probe because Lenzing arc statistics do seem to be sensitive to many things. Okay, and that's good.
Yeah, the things are very sensitive to that, and the power spectrum has changed a lot between 1 and 3, so it is worth double-checking what it does to this. And I sort of have a general question for everybody who's been involved in this kind of work, because it was my impression historically that what happened initially with the efforts to use lensing to place cosmological constraints is it basically gave you an upper limit on lambda, which eventually fell into disagreement with, you know, other lines of evidence that wanted a bigish lambda. And so what I'm wondering is it really, I mean, obviously it's hard to do this right. Is that really the problem, or is it the problem that we just had eventually developed a bias that the answer was known and this didn't agree with it, so it must be wrong?
Okay, well, I want to answer the sociological question because I'm a scientist. But I think as Chuck said yesterday, in the analysis of the radio surveys, there's a basic unknown, which is the source redshift distribution, which will probably remain unknown because the redshifts of these things are so hard to measure. And in the analysis of the quasar surveys, why did the answer come out wrong? Actually, I don't really know the answer to that yet, and I think it would be worthwhile now that we have large optical lens samples to redo that kind of statistical analysis. And this is, as I understand, what Inada and Oguri are doing. So we should wait for that.
Now that people are finding quasars lensed by clusters, right? I mean, if you can measure the optical depth of clusters versus that of galaxies, you have a very powerful measure of the tilt of the nonlinear power spectrum. I mean, is it going to be useful? Can you comment on that? Whether it's interesting, or I mean, whether it works out statistically with cosmological models?
It will when we have a dozen cluster lenses. At the moment we have two, so that's kind of small statistics. But right. Yeah, potentially it would be excellent. And clusters should be simpler than galaxies, right? And shouldn't have, well, no comment. Okay.